Is YouTube over? Well, I sure as heck hope not, because I spent a lot of my time on YouTube, both as a consumer and as a creator. But with so many folks talking about quitting YouTube, leaving YouTube, scaling down YouTube, is it really time for us to all crack each other's heads open and feast on the goo inside? I don't think so, but that doesn't mean we can't talk about it here and talk a little bit about the history of YouTube, why everyone keeps panicking all the time about things, and what does the future look like? Hello, my name is Pete. This is the Studio Live Today podcast. Thank you for being here. If you would like to subscribe to the podcast, you can jump on over and check it out at studiolivetoday.com/podcast, or make sure you subscribe to the channel if you want to see the video version. So what are we talking about here today? Well, this has kind of been sparked by the likes of MatPat, who is the Film Theory, Food Theory, Game Theory channel, if you're not aware of MatPat, Tom Scott, who has like millions of subscribers, been making amazing videos for years. A lot of folks seem to be either quitting, considering to quit YouTube, or leaving or scaling down what they're doing on YouTube. And there's a bunch of reasons behind that that I thought we would go through in this podcast. But a little bit of a history lesson for you. YouTube has been around since 2005, believe it or not. That's a long time. That's a lot of cat videos right there. But back in 2005, they didn't really know what it was all about. In fact, when it first started out, it was going to be a dating site, believe it or not. You were going to be able to post your videos, you know, like those old things where you'd get a cassette tape of people's like, "Hi, my name's Tom. I enjoy walking in the swamp and fishing for guppies." I don't know where that came from, but that was what it was supposed to be like. So like a dating site. And then they quickly realized that people didn't want to do that, especially the sort of nerds in 2005 that were online and that were watching videos. So it kind of changed from there. And originally what sort of happened is people started just sharing random videos. So videos of their cats. That's why the whole cat video meme came in. They were actually really popular, especially in early YouTube time. So people started sharing those sort of videos. And then they started sharing videos from clips of shows, clips of Saturday Night Live. This is where we got the viral videos that started happening. And that brought with it some challenges, particularly around copyright. Yeah, so we'll talk about copyright in a bit more detail as we go through here. But the copyright issues made YouTube really challenging because people weren't actually making money from YouTube back then. That's another good thing to keep in mind. But YouTube had to manage the copyright side of things. They were actually pretty aggressive and got on the front foot with this sort of stuff and developed something called Content ID, which if you'd like to learn more about Content ID, why it's good and mostly why it's not, you can check out the videos right here on the channel. Just search Pete John's Content ID and you'll find all the information. But in short, Content ID made sure that when someone used something that was copyrighted, the copyright owner could remove that, or once monetization came in, they could monetize that. They could take any of the money away from the original person. And this made the music studios as well as the TV and movie studios happy, because when people would share things, they were actually going to stay up. But they could choose to either bring them down, issue takedown notices, or they could get the money from the revenue of that. Where did that revenue come from? Well, it came from something called the YouTube Partner Program, which is why I can exist. The reason I can pay the bills here today is because the YouTube Partner Program exists. What is the YouTube Partner Program, the YPP, and how did it start? So, back in the early days, no one got paid any money on YouTube. Why? Because YouTube had no ads. Remember the glory days of no ad YouTube? Yeah, if you remember the 5-star rating system instead of the thumbs up, thumbs down, you probably remember that YouTube originally had no ads. But over time, the fine folks at YouTube sold YouTube to Google. And the fine folks at Google needed a way to monetize YouTube. So they did it through ads. So that's why before a video, in the middle of a video, after a video, you're going to see ads, either skippable or non-skippable ads. Those are paid for by the companies. Companies pay YouTube. And then YouTube pay the creators. That's the YouTube Partner Program. So if a company pays $100 to get a bunch of ads, then YouTube will take that $100 and then they'll pass on $70 to the creators whose videos those ads play on. And they keep the 30%. So they keep the VIG. They keep the little bit extra. And that's just the way it's been working for a very long time. However, in the early days, anyone could join this magical world of YouTube Partner Program. Until they couldn't. until YouTube said, we actually don't want smaller creators to be able to be part of this. And I actually felt the blow of this because I had a smaller channel before I even had Studio Live Today. I had a smaller channel that was technically monetized. I think I was getting about $10 or $5 a month from it because I had a few videos on there that were tutorials and helpful videos and like clips of things that people were watching. And anyone like me could just join the partner program and get paid for any of the revenue, for any of the advertising on any of their videos until YouTube said, let's put up a barrier there. Let's put a barrier there that says you have to have at least 4,000 hours of watch time in a year and at least 1,000 subscribers before we'll enable monetization on your channel. So this created a bit more of a problem because smaller creators could no longer get their channels monetized. So Let's go back to 8 years ago when I started this channel. I didn't have 1,000 subscribers, but luckily I was just in the right time where I snuck in and I was just up over that 1,000 and that 4,000 when the gates came down. So I kind of just snuck in and was able to continue with my YouTube partner program because I had just passed the thresholds that they required. I then started growing my channel. I did this as a side hustle because I had a full-time job, and I did this as a part-time job. I'd put out 1 to 2 videos a week, mostly short, not short enough, but mostly tutorial videos, medium-form content that was about GarageBand, about creating using your iPhone or your iPad. And a few of those videos started getting a substantial amount of views, and the ones that got a substantial amount of views got a substantial amount of advertising on them, which meant the $10 I was making turned into $100 I was making. And I was like, this looks like something that could be scalable. So me being me, I thought, let's just work really hard, start putting out a video every day. If one video a week's going to make you $100, will one video may make you $700? Well, turns out no. But it also turns out that if you do that for long enough and you build up enough of a back catalogue of videos and you take shot after shot after shot, occasionally you make a video about how to dig lint out of your headphone jack that gets 1 million views and suddenly you're an almost reputable YouTuber. Because there's lots of advertisers out there, they're paying decent amounts and the economy's doing pretty well. It was pre-pandemic, it was pre the T word, it was pre all those sort of things. So yeah, everything was going okay. Until it wasn't. Until some things happened in the world of YouTube. Until Adpocalypse happened. Until the Copapocalypse happened. The Child Online Protection Act happened. And everyone freaked out. So YouTube suddenly said, we're changing the rules. You can say this, you can't say this, you can do this, you can't do that. And it had an impact. It had a significant impact on creators because especially creators, if you'd had a children's channel or a family channel that was aimed at children, guess what? You could no longer monetize that channel. None of those videos were monetizable because they didn't want little kiddies clicking on videos and getting advertising for like online casinos or even for things that are appropriate for children, like sugary breakfast cereals, because they're so appropriate for children. So the Adpocalypse and the Copapocalypse kind of got people scared, and a lot of people moved away from YouTube at that time. So it actually, to be honest, whenever something like that happens, and this will get to my point at the end of this as to why I'm not quitting YouTube, is that every time something like that happens, you lose the folks that are not passionate. You lose the folks that aren't going to be persistent, that aren't going to push through because they see this, they knee-jerk react, they think the sky is falling, Chicken Little, the sky is falling, and they just leave. Whereas those that actually stay can often benefit from that. And guess what happened after the apocalypse? Yeah, we had a little pandemic between late 2019 and about 2022. And during that time, it was the heyday for YouTube. Why? Because no one could go anywhere. Everyone was stuck at home. And the number of people live streaming, the number of people making videos, the number of people making money on YouTube went through the roof. It was great. And the advertisers, they were flush with cash because guess who was advertising? Yeah, the Amazons, the Skypes, the Zooms, the people that were providing services that were helping all these poor souls that were stuck at home that couldn't leave and all they had to do was sit at home and watch YouTube videos because they wanted to learn how to play the ukulele. Yeah, it worked for everyone. Everyone was happy until they weren't. Until the worst possible thing happened and the pandemic ended, or at least wound down, because let's be honest, more people have the Cove these days than probably ever did. But yes, it wound down and we got to the point where people weren't watching as many videos. Not only that, all these companies and all these advertisers that had poured money into their businesses, guess what? What, bubbles can burst? What goes up must come down? Law of relativity? What? We can't just make money out of nothing? What? So what happened? The advertisers left. Well, if they didn't leave, they reduced the amount of spend. They laid people off. They needed to make more money for their shareholders. They weren't making as much money from all the products and services because all the things that people were doing during the pandemic were no longer the things that they were spending their money on. That then led to less disposable income that people had to spend money on products, and you get this vicious cycle. This is, you know, for those economic students out there, this is what a recession looks like, and this is what the depression looked like back in the 20s and 30s. So you get this self-fulfilling thing that's this circle where if I look at what I've done over the last year on YouTube, it's actually pretty terrifying because my views and my videos, yeah, they spiked in 2020 and 2021. They came back in 2022 and 23, and now they've kind of plateaued and leveled out. But you know what the challenge is? The actual CPR, the cost that you get, the amount that you get per view on YouTube has reduced for almost every creator on the platform. So it's reduced by anywhere from 20% up to 100%. So for some creators in some fields, if they were making a living wage, let's say they were making $50,000 a year from AdSense revenue, a living wage in most parts of the world. If that's now $25,000, that person has to take a long, hard, serious look at whether that's a viable income stream for them in the future. And yes, we've talked about it on this channel plenty of times before that for a YouTube content creator, for someone in this space, you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. You shouldn't be relying on building your house on that borrowed land that is owned by YouTube, which is owned by Google, which is owned by Alphabet, which is the second largest company in the world. So you do need to diversify. And for me, I've diversified in many ways. I have a Patreon, so you can join me at studiolivetoday.com/patreon. I sell merch. You can buy a wonderful rainbow design Studio Live Today t-shirt or mug at my merch store, studiolivetoday.com/merch. I've done courses in the past. I've got sponsors on some of my videos in the past, and DistroKid, a major sponsor of this channel, a great distributor. They sponsor my Your Music Live show. So there are other things that creators and people like me can do. I've just launched my membership, so that'll be announced formally very soon, but you can now join the YouTube, so you can become a YouTube member as part of my YouTube channel. So there's other things that are going to diversify for a lot of creators, but the bottom line and the reason, like creators can say a whole bunch of reasons, they're burnt out. Yeah, that's fair. It does burn you out when you're on YouTube. They say that things have changed, short form content has changed the ability to do things. And we'll just hold that thought because we will talk about that in a sec. Short form content has changed things. Yes, that's all true. But the bottom line, the absolute thing is that pool of money that was being equally distributed amongst a pool of creators, not only did that pool of creators increase over the pandemic because everyone saw that YouTube was a thing, and not only did a whole bunch of young people want to become YouTubers, so they did, the pool of money reduced over that time because less advertisers were spending less money on less ads because their businesses were going down too. So it's this vicious cycle. And to me, that is the number one reason. And I get it. I see why people are leaving. But here's the thing. It's a long game. How many times have you heard that things, it's a marathon, not a sprint? And do I know for a fact that YouTube is going to exist in 10 years' time? No. Will it be in the exact same form it's in now? Absolutely not, because it's not in the same form it was 10 years ago, and it's definitely not in the same form it was in 2005, where it was going to be a dating site. Let's just talk about Shorts, because that is probably the other big change that's happened in the last couple of years. TikTok, short-form content, Instagram stories, and Instagram reels, these have all been another factor, because advertisers that are after certain demographics, rather than advertising on YouTube, which is almost like a scattergun approach, just throw out pre-roll and post-roll ads, they can now specifically target people because Meta have a Facebook and Instagram, and because TikTok owned by ByteDance They're data companies. Let's be honest. They say that they're social media and video sharing companies. No, they are big data companies. Their job is to get as much personal information about you, your likes, your habits, and most importantly, what you spend money on, and then selling that data back to advertisers in the form of being able to specifically target people. So if an advertiser wanted to advertise a product, let's just say that they're selling a microphone, and they can advertise on YouTube and say, put this on channels like Studio Live Today, or more likely Rick Beato and Rhett Schull and people like that. They can do that. Or you know what they can do? They can create they can create 10 Instagram ads specifically targeted to different people in different regions, specifically in the regions where they know most people are using microphones. So they could go in and they could go, give me people that live in Nashville that earn more than $60,000 per year and have music as one of their interests, and let's target them. And that's available through things like TikTok and through Meta, because they provide it through Instagram and Facebook. So what does the future look like? I don't know, but here's the thing. I think that, like music, success in anything is about resilience and perseverance. And I got some really good advice from many people early on when I started doing this. One was Bobby Osinski. And if you don't know Bobby O, he's a really cool creator. He's done lots of videos and lots of courses and written books about mixing and recording. Bobby Osinski, O-W-I-N-S-K-I. And I actually reached out to him really early on and said, Bobby, I really like what you do. Do you have any tips? Like this has got to be 5-6 years ago. I'll find the email one day because I should really have it like framed on the wall. And he said to me, Pete, he says, things will change. People will come and go. And in his experience, the people he still sees around the industry, the people who are still being successful, aren't the most talented. They're not the people with the most skill. They're not the people with the most ability. They're the people that have persevered the longest. They're the people that won't give up. They're the people that are going to continue going. When the waters get rough, they don't just roll over and drown. They find a way to steer and to sail into clearer waters. So he didn't say it like that, but you know what I mean. He basically said, no, perseverance is much more important than skill and ability. And that's where I think we've got to with this. And not to say that people like MatPat and Tom Scott aren't persevering. These guys have been doing this for a decade. Like, I think the burnout is more the thing for them than anything else. Plus, they got a back catalogue of evergreen content. They got a retirement plan right there. I still watch Tom Scott videos from 8 years ago. I still watch Film Theory and Food Theory videos from 3 years ago because they're still cool and they're still fun. So I think that they're going to be all right. I hope you found this interesting, maybe a little thought-provoking, maybe it gave you a little nudge and helped you understand a little bit about the history, why creators may be struggling, and what you can do to help. Because at the end of the day, I don't hate that it is more focused on you as a viewer and me as a viewer of a YouTube channel to actually step up and say, I support. So I support a lot of creators through Patreon, I support them through memberships, I support them through donations. And I've seen over the last year, the kindness and the generosity of actual folks, real people, as opposed to relying on large corporations and million, billion, trillion dollar companies. I think that really is the future of creativity and the future of being able to support and have people that can have the freedom to be able to create and help you create, record, and release your best music. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. If you would like to subscribe to the podcast, head over to studiolivetoday.com/podcast. I'd love it if you'd leave a rating or a review if you're listening to the audio version. If you're watching the video, please leave any comments that you have. Leave your thoughts, your views, your questions. I'm always down in the comments section. And leave a little thumbs up like button on the video while you're there. Until next time, folks, please be kind to yourself, be kind to others, and keep creating. I'll see you soon.